The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
This man, if he can feed me, maybe he really wants to send me to school. But I also think he saw the best in me at my lowest, that he saw a kid that was loved by God. He saw a kid that had a potential. And I think he said, I want to invest in this kid. And truly, that's really what changed my life, that I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school because he believes in me.
Peter was barely surviving on the streets of Uganda at age 10 when one man changed his life forever. Next.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Sheila Walsh is with me.
Hey.
We're glad that you are here. And you know, if you've been watching Life Today for long, you see that we love to work all around the world, and we especially like to bless children. And you know, over the years, we have seen some great stories of children that come from dire situations to have a wonderful life. Well, today's guest was not a part of any of Life's outreaches, but was one of those children that we often see who came from just abject poverty. And his story is such a beautiful God story of hope. We're excited that you're here. Peter, great to have you on Life Today.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you for having me here. Truly a joy to be here.
So take us back. You were born in Uganda in a very poor, desperate situation. Tell us a little bit about where you came from.
Yes, absolutely. So I was born in Uganda from the poor of the poorest. You know, it's hard to explain to Americans sometimes what poverty is, but think about that you're a mom, but you can't feed your child for days to come. You know, think about as a kid that you never had water, that you had to walk miles and miles to just get clean water. You know, think about you didn't have extra clothes to wear. Well, that was me, you know, that I grew up among the poor of the poorest. And so I grew up in a place where no one ever told me to be hopeful, you know. As I said, it's hard when a mom can't give you a meal. How does she tell you you make it, you know?
Yeah.
I grew up in a place where schooling wasn't available for us. You know, how do they tell you to dream when they cannot send you to school? And that was really my life, that all I knew was really poverty. And hopelessness is all I saw every morning before I went to bed. And when I woke up, it was just an everyday thing. And so that was my background.
One of the things, I mean, this is a great book. I read it cover to cover. Amazing, amazing story. One of the things that I found really heartbreaking was how cruel your father was with you. And what are your memories of your early life with your father?
Well, the early memories, you know, had to sometimes go back. But I think for me, the hard part was, you know, that one person that should protect you was the worst person that in your life. That for me, poverty was one side. But also I had a mean dad that if poverty didn't take me, I think I was worried my dad would take my own life. And I think as a kid at 4 or 5 to watch, you know, the abuse towards me and also towards my mom, you know, I never had one kind word from my dad as long as I can remember. No, Peter, hey, you're a good kid. Oh, Peter, good work. I think all I had was, you'll never amount to anything. I wish you were never born. You'll never be anything in my life. And so you grew up hearing that. It really makes you not just miserable, but also hopeless in some way. That he's someone who should really encourage me and show me the future. But at the same time, he's my worst enemy. You know, so the physical abuse, the verbal abuse was really difficult, especially towards me and towards my mom as well. So that's the obvious, you know, that I can remember my childhood was just really miserable, that we would never eat in front of my dad, you know. We had to eat before he came, if he came before a meal, that meal went through the window. And so it was just miserable in every shape form you think, and that became my day-to-day life.
Yeah. How old were you when you were basically on the streets and trying to help people with their groceries and things like that just to get a bite to eat? How old were you? How old was that?
I was 10.
So at 10 years, okay. So and I'm just reading through your book as well. And you're 10 years old and you're having to kind of con your way sometimes to try to get some food. And that's when a man came into your life that actually saw you.
Correct.
Asks your name. Tell us a little bit about that time, because that was a real transformational time for you.
Right. So at the age of four, I began to realize, yes, poverty and being dead. At the age of 10, I thought, you know, rather than let my dad take my own life, I'm going to just run away and let someone else do it, you know. But also, I think I didn't want to give him the joy of really the abuse in some way. I had never been 20 miles away from my village, and I just got on the bus and I went 500 kilometers.
And
I
ended up, 10 years
I'm 10
old.
Years old.
You're just a wee boy.
Absolutely. I ended up in Kampala. And it's not like I was looking for hope. I think for me was, if life was to end, it'd rather be somewhere else by someone else that I didn't know. You know, finally I made it to Kampala. You know, as soon as I got there, I knew I had one choice, and that one choice was to be a street kid. You know, as street kids, you know, life was miserable. I think we were treated more like stray animals. You know, we ate in the garbage. I smelled like one. You know, I was a thief every day. So life was just miserable in every way, shape, form, that all I had was your garbage. But I believed it because I lived in it. Yeah. I scavenged like dogs, like anyone else. So I believed that. So in some way, just hopeless as a kid. And as kids, we would always help. It was easy to steal while you were helping. So if someone buys matoke, I carry them, take them from one end to the other, and then pick up one, you know. And then the other, you know, the other street kid would do the same. At the end of the day, we'll have enough food to eat, you know. Uh-huh. So this day, I saw one gentleman who was wearing khakis and glasses. And I said, that's my target, you know. So as soon as I walked towards him, you know, I wanted to help. He said, hey, what's your name? I mean, that rattled me. So I stopped. I said, why would you want to know my name? I had lived on the streets for 4.5 years, and no one had ever addressed me or asked me my name.
Wow.
And this gentleman says, what's your name? I was like, my name is Peter. And before I could take the food, he gave me something to eat. And he left. I saw him the next week. He did the same. The fourth week, I kind of knew, you know, he comes every Monday between 5 and 7. So I've got my meal, you know. And so he fed me for 1.5 years. And finally, one day he said, hey, Peter, would you love to go to school, you know? And I said, wait, me? Of course no. You know, to you who are listening, especially Americans, is to a street kid to say, would you like to go to school? It's like me telling you two, would you like to go to the moon? Like, people
impossible.
Going to the moon, would you like to go? Mm-hmm. You know, it's impossible. It's a far-fetched dream as well. So that's how I felt when he said, would you love to go to school? I was like, me? You know? But I think with the kindness he'd shown me for 1.5 years, I began to believe him. I began to say, this man, if he can feed me, maybe he really wants to send me to school. But I also think he saw the best in me at my lowest, that he saw a kid that was loved by God. He saw a kid that had a potential. And I think he said, I want to invest in this kid. And truly, that's really what changed my life, that I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school because he believes in me. And that truly changed my life forever.
I didn't get to this part in the book. Whatever happened to him?
Well, he's still my family. You know, everyone knows it's my dad, you know, because he not only did he send me to school, but after a few months, he said, hey, would you like to be part of our family? You know, so for the first time, I began to see a family. You know, yeah. I think my first day in the house, you know, they were all sitting on the table. And for me, I said, I'm going to, you know, sit by the exit door, because I was looking for an exit. I was waiting for something bad to happen, because that's what I saw in my family. But I saw how he loved his family, how they prayed and how they sat around the table. And the cool thing he said, Peter, here's a seat for you. And I think for the first time I felt, oh, I can sit by the table. And truly that changed my life. And since then, they've been family to me to this day.
The thing that's amazing to me about your story, Peter, is that sometimes when somebody has been rescued from a hard situation, they then move on and want to forget about that. You have not done that. Your life is now about other people. You've fostered. How many children have you fostered?
24.
And you adopted
one boy. I'm in the process of adopting 3 more.
Oh my gosh. When did faith become real for you? And was it the slow kindness of this man that helped you to believe that God saw you?
Absolutely. I think the way he was kind to me, he never shared with me the gospel, but he lived it. He was kind to me. He never called me the other names everyone called me. He invited me in a place where nobody invited me. He saw the best in me when nobody saw that in me. Even myself, I didn't see potential, but yet he could see it. And so his kindness, I think, is what made me want to be like this man. But at the same time, I got to know that he loves the Lord. And I think that really began a change for me. But I didn't become a Christian right away. I think the anger and hatred towards my dad, I was like, this Christian thing, I don't like it. Because it's telling me to forgive my dad.
Sure.
And I think I'm not ready to forgive my dad. I think, you know, now I was 18, 19, I wanted to go home and break my dad's leg and say, Dad, my time to pay back.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
I think in my head, that's what I really wanted, you know. But one day, you know, I think he really showed me the life of Joseph. People always say, Peter, remember when Joseph saw his brothers, you know? Remember when the brothers said, oh, he's going to kill us. But what he said, for what you meant for evil, God used it for good to save lives. And I think that really changed my life to really want to be a Christian. Also, I think I had moved on and done well in life, but I didn't want my dad's anger and what I felt to somewhere ruin my future, you know? That I needed to know Christ my Lord and Savior and in some way take that away from me so I can focus on what I can be as a dad. So when I came to the United States, I think I struggled. My first time in the U.S., I struggled with my faith. You know, I think for me, seeing how much food was thrown away and knowing that I had grown up from a place where I could never have a meal a day, you know, and I began to ask myself, does God love us the same way, you know?
Right.
And I think with time, I realized that I was blessed, you know, as well, that I was fortunate, you know. You know, Luke 12:48, too much is given, much is required, that he'd given me a family I didn't have. He'd given me a place to be that I didn't have. He'd taken me to school. Not only did I go to school, university in Uganda, I had gone to school in England, and that's how I came to the United States. So for me, I felt, man, I have so much to give. And that's when I decided that I wanted to be a foster dad, because he'd done that for me, that I wanted to do the same for others as well, especially kids who come from a place of hardship. I was one of those kids, but yet he saw the best in me, that it was my time to also see the kids in the best way possible and bless them.
Yeah. So I went onto your website, because your book's called Now I'm Known. I went onto your website and I saw this really cool thing where you have this little stuffed animal called Simba.
Right.
You know, modeled after one of your dogs. And I did this thing where you get to like pay like $50 or something, and then I will get one Simba and one will be given to a foster child. What's special about that toy?
Well, this is what's special about this toy. When this man took me in, he used words of affirmation to help me overcome my own views. I never felt I was special, but he would say, Peter, you are special. I never felt I belong. He would say, Peter, you belong. I never felt I was a gift or chosen, but he would use those words of affirmation that truly helped me in some way remove the scale of abuse, remove the scale of shame. Then now I began to see myself like, you know what? If he says I'm special, maybe I'm special. And then I began to do well in school. And I think as soon as I, you know, did well, I thought, if one day I ever become a parent, I'm also going to use words of affirmation to encourage my kids. So as soon as I became a foster dad, I wrote three little pieces of paper on the steering wheel with those 12 affirmations. So when I'm driving, I can always remember to tell my kid, you're special, you're kind, you belong. Also in my closet, because sometimes I want to give up, but to go back and say, Peter, you can do this because you belong, because you're chosen to be this dad. And so I needed something to help me. And once we got the dogs, well, I thought, wait a minute. Sometimes my kids don't want to talk to dad. When they're angry, they want to go to their rooms and hide, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought, but they always take their dog. But what if I write the words of affirmation on a piece of bandana and then make sure that our dogs always have them? And it worked.
So great.
It worked.
Way.
So then when people would come and visit, they say, man, we love that. Well, we thought through, wait a minute, what if we created, we duplicated our dog Simba and write those words of affirmation, because I saw how they were really helping my kids. So we can give them to kids in the hospital, but also kids in the foster care. And so that's the idea of truly, in some way, a little piece of glimpse of hope to others that need it the most, you know? When you feel unwanted and you have this little teddy bear that says, you are chosen, you're a gift to us, I think it's a way to encourage others that they are special.
It's
and that's why we have that Simba.
I love it.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And, you know, we're kind of jumping through highlights of your life, and it's really unfair because you have to read the book. And we're going to tell you how to get the book in just a minute. But I have a couple of questions for you, Peter. First of all, what do you say to the children that you run across that you may see a little bit of yourself in, just in the sense of they don't know their own value? They don't see any future for them. What are the words you say to them to convey what God wants them to hear?
I think, you know, writing the book was the best way for me to encourage. My kids love to read, and I could not tell them my details of my life. So I thought writing a book that someone made me known, that someone saw the best in me. He saw a kid that was struggling. He saw a thief, but he never saw that. He saw a kid with a potential. And so for me, I wanted my kids to read through the book and get to see if dad can come from this far and overcome this, I can do it as well, you know? And I wanted to be honest about my life. When my kids, you know, steal something, I'm like, yeah, I was a thief. I can be honest about that. But I say, well, because someone came in my life and helped me, I would have gone to jail. That would have taken away the opportunities I could be. I stopped. And I know you can do it as well. Mm-hmm. I can help you as a dad. That you overcome that, because I want you to be the best you can be, you know, rather than focus on the behavior, but look to where they can be by being honest about my journey as well.
I love it. The second question I have is for anyone who may be in the position that James, you know, the man you call your dad now, was in, which was, we have children, whether they're right in front of us in our community or maybe halfway around the world, that we can impact with those acts of kindness, with those words of affirmation. And so I think sometimes we don't really understand how powerful that is. What do you say to those people that reach out to help that child that seems to have no hope?
Well, absolutely. I think we all want to help, but we think of maybe the house. I don't have the house. Or until I earn this much money. And we'll never earn what we need. But I think also I found out that kids aren't looking for the best home you can find. Mm-hmm. Our kids in care or who are struggling aren't looking for the best shoe. They are looking for someone to come alongside and say, it is hard today, and for you to say, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And we can take a little piece, you know, and that's why we created the plushie and the book, that sometimes just a little plushie might help that family or that kid feeling, I am unworthy. I'm not part of God's special people. That we can do, you know. And I know we are all not called to be foster parents, but I think we can help one another. I love the African saying, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. It truly takes a village. For me as a parent, you know, I have people who take me for coffee, and that's all I need to overcome or to be there for my kids. Mm-hmm. I got two teenagers. Some of my friends, they come and take them to play video games. Mm-hmm. And that's all they want. You know, my little girl, sometimes, you know, someone comes and takes her to pump her and take her in a place so she feels she's loved. So it's not that we can all do one thing, but I think a little along the way, we do something small, we get to impact the child.
Yeah.
That's something that we care about a lot. Yeah. In fact, do you know that Peter was 16? Before he got his first pair of shoes. And he is not alone. There are so many children around the world who have never worn a pair of shoes, but we can change that. So we're gonna tell you how to get hold of Peter's book because it's great. I also go and get the wee plushy toy because it's amazing. But first of all, we'd like you to watch this because you and I can be part of this community that changes the world in Jesus' name. Watch this.
All around the world, children face severe problems like starvation, filthy drinking water, and sexual predation. But where heartache abounds, so do opportunities to put God's love into action. Recently, you may have helped us seize these opportunities by providing a child with a daily bowl of food, rescuing an at-risk girl from human traffickers, or drilling a clean water well for a needy village. This coming Christmas, we have an opportunity to bless many of these same children with a special gift that they'll cherish and that will protect their very lives.
This is Berta, and we want to be able to get her children some shoes. It's not just a matter of giving them something for their feet. It's very important. But the main thing is they get diseases walking around here barefoot, and their little feet just get tortured.
I guess you don't really think about if she's walking around without a pair of shoes, how it affects her feet. If her foot gets cut and she's stepping even in contaminated water, how that could affect her feet, infect her feet.
This really is a gift of life as much as anything else. So let's try these, buddy. Let's see how they go. It so reminds me of like Christmas morning, you know, in our house. It's like they're showing each other their shoes. They're excited because they look so cool. Something as simple as a pair of shoes can really change a child's life.
Help make this Christmas one these children will never forget. Help us provide Christmas shoes and smiles.
Because of your gift, we're able to put shoes on her feet. Now she'll be able to run around and be safe. Peter, what difference did it make in your life when you got a pair of shoes?
Well, when I got a pair of shoes, first of all, there are places I was afraid to go. There are places I felt I was less because I didn't have a pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to school and everyone wears shoes and you don't have shoes. You don't feel you belong. But yet a small gesture, a small thing like a shoe mm-hmm. on how it really gives someone dignity, but also the pride to feel they belong, you know? So it's not just a shoe. It's more than that, you know, that it really gives a little kid to think beyond a shoe, but how far they can go, who they can feel they're part of it.
And maybe you're thinking, well, isn't it a little early to be talking about Christmas? But we do that very specifically each year because we want to get in all the help that we need to be able, because our commitment for this Christmas is to provide 150,000 pairs of shoes to children who've never had a pair of shoes in their life. And as Peter said, dignity, hope, a sense that you belong. And in so many of the places that Randy and I have been, it's a health issue too. You know, your feet are cut and you pick up disease and it ruins everything. It's not a lot we're asking, but can you imagine how great this Christmas would be if suddenly it was not about what we got? It's about we have already received the greatest gift of all, who is Jesus. And because of that, we can now give to other children the gift that might even save their lives. And we can do this.
We have, and I'm going to hold this up because over the last 15 years, you, the viewers, the supporters of Life Outreach International, have given away over 2.5 million pairs of shoes just like that. That's 2.5 million children who have gotten, many of them for the first time, a pair of shoes that they own. And like you say, there is a health component to this.
Very much so.
It will protect them from certain things. But like Peter said, there's also a dignity component to this. And then the other part is you and just reaching out and saying, you know, it may be a huge thing to you, may seem like a small thing to us, but this is a gift, and we give it in the name of Jesus Christ, and we put smiles on their faces just with the shoes. And then, of course, with the corrective surgeries, we literally give many children the ability to smile. Children who have not been able to do many of the things that children need to, like nurse or eat properly or breathe properly. So we're changing children's lives with your support. Through some wonderful, wonderful things. And this Christmas, it's just a special one. So we invite you in. On the surgeries, just to give you an idea, they're an average of $500 a piece. Many of you can provide a surgery or two or three or four, and I would ask you to just consider doing that today. The shoes themselves are very economical. $36 will provide 10 pairs of shoes. That's 10 children that will get shoes for a gift of $36. Maybe you can give $72 and that will provide 20 pairs of shoes for 20 children. Whatever you can do, I ask you to consider it. Let's make this Christmas very special for some children around the world. We've done it in the past and we can do it again this year with your support. So go online or go to the phones right now. Make the best gift you can and let's give away more shoes and more smiles.
Poverty is a killer, and because of it, children needlessly suffer, not only from a lack of food and clean water, but also from a lack of things we often take for granted, like a simple pair of shoes. Far too many children living in extreme poverty have never owned a new pair of shoes, and while that may seem minor in light of all their needs, walking with bare feet puts them at risk of life-threatening infections and disease that could lead to crippling consequences and even death. By responding today, you will help secure and make ready 150,000 pairs of Christmas shoes to be shipped and delivered to children around the world, just in time for the holidays. Your gift of $36 will help provide 10 pairs of shoes. A gift of $72 will help provide 20 pairs. And a gift of $180 will help provide 50 pairs of Christmas shoes for children in need. As a thank you for your gift of support, be sure to request this beautifully crafted red crystal shoe ornament, a treasure to display at each Christmas. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request this keepsake boxed set featuring four of life's crystal Christmas shoe ornaments. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help provide over 275 pairs of shoes, or two children with corrective cleft lip or palate surgeries, and you may request the beautiful bronze sculpture, Let the Children Come. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I hope you are going online or going to the phone right now, making the best gift you can, and we can give away, hit our goal on the shoes and the smiles. Now, Peter, you've got some shoes. They're a little more expensive than these. Show us your shoes.
Yeah, so as you say, it's amazing what a shoe will change a child. I never had a pair of shoes until when I was 16 years old. Mm. And my first pair of shoes was Converse. And I can remember because it helped me go to school. I mean, I had lost all my toes, all my nails, because I had to walk miles and miles without a shoe. And sometimes if you have a toe and it's bleeding, that means you cannot get water for your family. That means you cannot go to school. Mm. So it's amazing how a simple shoe really changed a life. For me, this was my first pair of shoes.
Those are nice.
And it changed my life forever. I feel I can go to school and feel like I'm part of it. So what are you doing? I can tell you, and I can promise you, you are changing lives. So this Christmas, to give those kids smiles like I had,
like
I think for
had.
Me, I
yeah.
cried for a few days because I had never had a pair of shoes. And man, wow. to be able to walk in that school feeling, it's going to be okay because I was wearing a pair of shoes is amazing. So what you're
love
doing,
it.
You're going to change lives for sure.
Fantastic. And for any gift at all, please request your copy of Peter's book, Now I Am Known. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It was powerful.
Well, thank you. And that's why I'm writing my book, so you can see a little bit more details of what my life was as a child and how I overcame all that to be who I am, especially as a foster dad.
And he's about to foster two more children, so pray for Peter. We love you. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll see you next time on Life
bye
Today.
Bye.
Next week, Kathy Lee Gifford and Rabbi Jason Sobel discuss the God of the Way.
We want people to see the scriptures in high definition.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.